The National Broadcasting Company presents the fourth program in a series of broadcasts which come to you each month under the auspices of the Student Science Clubs of America, an affiliation of science clubs in high schools and colleges throughout the United States and Canada. This afternoon, Victor Lemaire, professor of chemistry at Columbia University, will be interviewed by two New York City students. Professor Lemaire.
Good afternoon, members of the Student Science Clubs of America and their friends who are listening in. We'll begin the program today by interviewing two of our student members located in Greater New York City. The Science Club of the Port Washington Long Island High School has sent Robert Van Allen as their representative. Robert Van Allen is with us in the studio, and he will tell us about the activities of the Port Washington Science Club.
We call our club the Retort, since most of our members are interested in chemistry and physics. The purpose of our club is to enable the members to learn more about these sciences than is possible in the allotted time and limitations of the classroom. We always have 100% attendance because the members anticipate listening to interesting speakers secured for us by our faculty advisor, Mr. Pickett. Some of these men have been from the industry. One of the most interesting talks was on rubber, which traced its production from the latex in Sumatra to the numerous finished products now on the market. Other topics have included the story of modern refrigeration, the history of the microscope. Mr. Pickett encourages the members to give informal talks at the club meetings. These discussions are often accompanied by demonstrations. This gives us opportunities to become familiar with more complicated scientific apparatus, and it also adds to our self-confidence. We have made a number of trips to museums and industrial plants. On our next trip, we plan to go to the Hayden Planetarium. And following that, we are going to the House of Magic, an exhibit of the General Electric Company.
Do you have any social activities connected with your club?
Oh, yes. The whole school looks forward to the dance we give each year in cooperation with the Girls Social Club.
What are the requirements for membership in your club?
Only boys who show interest and ability in science are invited to join. There are no dues. Occasionally assessments are made, but generally the income from the dance is sufficient to support us.
Robert, what are some of the topics and demonstrations which your club has performed recently?
Last week, a member gave a demonstration on the expansion of a wire with high electric resistance when it was heated by the passage of the electric current. The wire was attached to a pointer by means of a pulley, so that any small contraction or expansion was magnified on the pointer. A demonstration I made was to show the principle of an induction coil. We could produce a spark of almost 5 inches with this apparatus.
Thank you, Robert. I will now present Arthur Lawrenson, who is representing the Chemistry Club of the Newtown High School of Greater New York, located at Elmhurst, Long Island. Arthur, will you tell us what your club is doing?
Our club has worked on several interesting projects. In our club program last term, we specialized in the study of metals. Two of our members constructed a model blast furnace, which actually worked. I have here a piece of the iron that we produced. It took these boys about 4 months to build a furnace. We used magnetite from the Ringwood mines at Hewitt, New Jersey, as the ore, coke for the fuel, and limestone for the flux. We took a motion picture and some snapshots of the furnace while it was working. Here is a snapshot taken when we tapped the iron from the furnace. Our study of metals also included the production of copper on a small scale. We built a small gas furnace to smelt the copper, which was a mixture of chalcocite and cuprite. The ore was smelted in a graphite crucible, and when the molten copper was produced, it was poured into molds. We refined this copper electrolytically. This year, one of the boys is making a study of alloys. He has constructed a small gas furnace from a tin can and fire clay, and an old vacuum cleaner furnishes his source of compressed air. In his small furnace, he has already produced 10 or 12 alloys. Here's a bar of the bronze he made. There was considerable difficulty at first with zinc alloys, for the zinc always oxidized, but that has now been overcome by using ammonium chloride as a flux. All the alloys were cast into small bars and then polished. At the present time, the club is working on a demonstration of the Lowy effect of X-rays on various types of crystals grown by members of the club.
Thank you, Arthur. The faculty advisor to the chemistry club at the Newtown High School is Mrs. Ruth Johnson Arnold. Mrs. Arnold, I hope you are listening in. I wish to congratulate you upon the successful work of your club.
Professor Lemaire, you have asked a number of questions. Will you now answer a few for us?
Why, yes, I will try to.
What do you consider the most interesting phenomenon in science?
Well, that's rather hard to answer, because there are many equally good answers. Radioactivity has always appealed to me as one of the marvels of physical science. Its interpretation is one of the most fascinating and revolutionary of the many ideas that have forced their way into modern science.
Professor Lemaire, I am told that radium costs about $50,000 a gram. This means that it is so rare that only a few of the best-equipped laboratories can afford to experiment with it.
Well, the statement about the value per gram is true, but the conclusion you draw is incorrect. I will tell you of an experiment which every member of your club is competent to perform, and which I think will prove just as illuminating and as instructive as would an experiment requiring a sample of radium costing many thousands of dollars. Besides, most of you carry the necessary radium on your wrist. You all know that radium is the chemical element which makes your luminous radio light watch dial glow at night. But have you ever examined your watch dial in a dark room with a good hand lens? If not, try this experiment this evening. First, you must spend about 10 minutes in a totally dark room or closet so that your eyes will become accommodated to the darkness and thus be able to detect minute flashes of light. After waiting 10 minutes, you'll observe that the luminosity, when viewed through a hand lens, is not a quiet, continuous glow, but resembles more nearly a shower of shooting stars. Bright, momentary flashes of light, or scintillations, appear and disappear in the field of vision. These flashes are produced by the radioactive disintegration, or the explosion of the atoms of radium. The white material on the dial is zinc sulfide, mixed with a most minute amount of radium. When an atom of radium explodes, the fragments which belch forth strike neighboring zinc sulfide atoms and produce a scintillation. The impact is so forceful that the zinc sulfide sees stars. By counting the number of scintillations, one can actually determine the number of atoms of radium exploding per minute. This experiment serves as a convenient method of standardizing the strength of radioactive products. You may judge how small is the amount of radium necessary when you recall that radium costs about $50,000 a gram, while the radium on the whole watch dial costs but a few cents. It seems incredible that the incessant bombardment of the zinc sulfide can be caused by such a minute amount of radium as I have just described. Yet, a milligram of radium bromide expels every second about 10,000 million of these particles. If we contemplate this mighty swarm expelled each second for many centuries, we then begin to have some idea of how many atoms there are in a single milligram of matter and how small is a single atom. A generation ago, you would have been ridiculed, even for hoping that you would ever see through a magnifying glass the effect of a single atom of matter. Yet each scintillation on your watch dial is nothing else.
Professor Lemaire, can you describe another experiment which our club can perform?
Yes, I can. Radioactive substances possess the property of giving off actinic rays, which blacken a photographic plate protected by paper impervious to ordinary light. This property can be demonstrated by anyone acquainted with the elements of photography. The ash from an ordinary Welsbach incandescent gas mantle contains enough radioactive material for the experiment. First, burn off the fiber in the usual way. Then cut the mantle with the scissors. Open and press the mantle of ash as flat as possible upon a card. Now lay a photographic plate or a film, which has been wrapped in some very thin black paper, upon the flattened mantle of ash. Then place a heavy book on top of the photographic film, and leave the whole wrapped in several layers of black cloth, undisturbed in a dark place for about 2 weeks. On developing the plate, it will be found that an image of the mantle has been formed by the radioactive rays which penetrate the paper. Thus, radium not only gives off material particles, producing scintillations, but it also generates penetrating X-rays which affect the photographic plate. One can improve upon the experiment by cutting a stencil of thin aluminum foil and photographing the stencil.
Professor Lemaire, will you tell us about the research work you are conducting at Columbia University?
My investigations have dealt mostly with aqueous solutions, and particularly with the theory of ionization of electrolytes. For example, among other things, we are trying to answer the question, why some salts, like Epsom salt, are soluble, while others, like silver chloride, are so insoluble. Why some reactions proceed rapidly without catalysts, while others go slowly even with catalysts. The problem of reaction velocity constitutes one of the most important and pressing problems in present-day chemistry. By the aid of a mathematical treatment called thermodynamics, we can now calculate just how far a reaction will proceed before it reaches the state of rest we call equilibrium. Unfortunately, thermodynamics tells us nothing about the time factor. We are just beginning to understand how to make the calculations of the time required to reach equilibrium. At the present time, I am studying the theory underlying the rates of chemical reactions by using that new research tool, heavy water, discovered at Columbia University by my colleague, Professor Urey. Heavy water, as you all know, contains a hydrogen atom called deuterium, because it has an atomic weight of 2 instead of 1. One would expect the heavier deuterium atoms to be more sluggish because of their greater mass. A fat man usually moves more slowly than a thin man. Consequently, chemical reactions involving heavy water should proceed more slowly. However, instead of finding a decrease in rate of about 41%, as was predicted a year ago, we are now finding that the substitution of heavy water for light water actually reduces the rates of certain reactions by as much as 500%. That is, a fivefold decrease. In a very few reactions, the rate is actually increased. So the answer cannot be given entirely in terms of fat or thin men. We are also studying the electrical conductivity of solutions of common salt and of hydrogen chloride in heavy water. We find that in heavy water, the conductance is decreased by about 23%. This decrease is due almost entirely to an increase in the viscosity of heavy water as compared to light water. But just why heavy water should be 23% more viscous than ordinary water seems at the moment to be as puzzling and inexplicable as was the phenomenon of radioactivity some 30 years ago.
You have been listening to an interview between Victor Lemaire, professor of chemistry at Columbia University, and two New York City students. This is the fourth program in a series of broadcasts which come to you each month under the auspices of the Student Science Clubs of America, an affiliation of science clubs in high schools and colleges throughout the United States and Canada. Copies of these discussions may be had by addressing the Student Science Clubs of America headquarters at Pennsylvania State College, State College, Pennsylvania, or the station to which you are listening. This program came to you from the RCA Building, Radio City, New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.